today, hopefully, is to at least get the precipice of Horesh, try to get the plow as far into Horesh as we can. But we have some things on the agenda first. So we had started discussing Hasra B'Shem Ha'av, and then also on the subject of Avos, and that paternalistic subject. So we also have to figure out what our Gemara, when it talks about the different ideas that are of Zoraya, how are those assigned in terms of Av, Toldo, or something else, and what are the ramifications of that? So let's try to get a little bit of perspective on hopefully all of those matters today. So first of all, just to take a step back, so we started yesterday to talk about this question of Hasra B'Shem Ha'av. So we'll just recap a little bit and try to take it further. So essentially we saw that there was a question in the Rishonim that we don't know how much of a nafka mina there is in general to defining avos as separate from each other. The most dominant nafka mina so far seems to be that there are different korbanos, so the chai is more than one if you do two separate avos, etc. And of course that has limited relevance in a modern context. So we can extend it to the concept of hasra, which also has limited relevance in a modern context, but is at least possibly another nafka mina. As we've shown and discussed, that maybe under the surface of some of these questions, what the Gemara wants to figure out, what's the av, what's this av, what's that av, so maybe what the issue is for the purposes of hasra, that we know that if somebody's going to get executed, if somebody's going to get really any punishment from Beis Din, it has to go through a process which involves hasra, meaning that two eidim have to come and warn the individual, you're in trouble, if you do this, are you still planning on doing it? And the individual says, yes, I'm doing it anyway, and that's how he gets what's coming to him. So the Rishonim addressed the question, maybe you should say that it's not enough to say, sir, you're being mechal Shabbos. You have to be more specific. You have to say you are violating the Isser of Kosher. You are violating the Isser of Bonin. So Tosus in a few places, including on Ar Gemara, on the base, and a number of other places, raise the question, is that indeed what we should be deriving from the Gemara? Should we assume that there is such a requirement? And while there are some Rashis who sound like, yes, that's the case, we would say that the Hasra has to be B'Shem Ha'av. Tosus, for the most part, takes the view that no, it doesn't actually have to be B'Shem Ha'av. The reason the Gemara sometimes brings it up is because of a different detail. That really it's enough to say you're being Makal Shabbos. You don't have to be more specific than that. It's just that if you would mention the wrong Av, let's say you decide to be a go-getter, you decide to be Mahadir in Hasra, and say more than you need to. So if you say the right Av, fine. But if you name the wrong Av, and if that guy's about to write something, and you say, oh my gosh, you're violating the Yisr of Bishul B'Shabbos, so he's going to think it's a joke. He's not going to take it seriously, and that negates the whole Av. So essentially, that's the way Tosus understands it, that you don't have to have the Av. If you're going to have the Av, do it right. So therefore, we discuss it for that purpose.
I forgot who said this, but there was one of the things that said that you're actually supposed to bring the pasuk. You bring over on when it says, Kulacha Batasu. I don't know. But, you know, in general, that would mean that really you don't have to say an Av, because all the Av would fall under one Israel of Chal Shabbos.
Right, that's exactly the question, because that's really what's bothering Tosus. Right? That if we assume, let's assume as a baseline, we'll see in a second, Rambam is an exception to this. Well, let's assume that normally when we talk about Onshin of the Torah, you just have to identify the Aveder. So why should Shabbos be different? That since in the Torah, it doesn't identify specific malachos, so what basis do I have to think I have to be more specific? Any other Aveder, there's no reason to assume I should be more specific than what the Torah says. So it says, Lo Sirtzach, you don't have to say, don't kill with a gun, don't kill with a knife, don't kill with poison. You assume that it's all one prohibition of Los Angeles. So just because there happen to be different ways to do the same thing, so there's no reason to assume that we have to be more specific than we're going to be. So when it comes to Shabbos, if we're essentially saying there's one pasuk, there's many times pasuk the same thing, but there's one iser, and there's 39 different ways to violate it, fine, who cares? Why do I have to be so specific when I'm issuing this hasra? So that's a question that the Rishonim are dealing with, and that's really the thrust of why Tosfos is saying you probably don't have to do all that. You probably don't have to name it, because why should it be any different? And the Rambam is on the other side of this extreme, that the Rambam essentially seems to say, the way it comes out in Hilchos Sanhedrin, that you don't have to identify anything. All you have to do is tell the person, you are a bad lawyer, you are violating the Torah, and it's going to get you in trouble. And you don't have to identify what is the specific iser, let alone the specific av within Kol Shabbos. So we have essentially three positions. Either you just have to say bad boy, you don't have to say what he's doing wrong, or you have to name a violation of the Torah, or if not that, even more, you have to name a specific, when it comes to Shabbos, Shabbos is special. Not just name what the Torah says, but you have to also name the Av. So if you take that last position, why should that be true? Yehuda's question is well taken. It doesn't say in the Torah any specific others. So why should I have an obligation to go along with the Av? So we started to mention yesterday in one position that maybe essentially we treat every malacha like it's a separate pasuk. Even though it's not, we pretend that it is, and we treat it like that for all intents and purposes. Why should we do that? Because, again, our Yavama student is okay, because Havara L'chalek Yotzis, we have a concept of Chiluch Malachos, that's where the whole different Karbanos idea comes from. The reason I bring two Karbanos if I violate two Malachos in one session is because we see them as separated from each other. That's the concept of Chiluch Malachos. And the Gemara on Daf Ayin had a number of possibilities where that comes from. Most well known, the pasuk of Los Varvesh. And Tosfos Rid, and the Gemara on Daf Kuf Lamed Ches, has that understanding in what Havara L'chalek Yotzis means, that it essentially treats every halacha like it's its own pasuk. So there are those who say that's what's going on here, that's why Shabbos should be special. Yo?
Can I give the mitzvot today break up?
Shabbos is 39 mitzvot? No, I don't think so. Pretty sure not. But the question is bigger. As hard of a time we have figuring out what nafkamina is of different avos, it's even harder to figure out what nafkamina is of different mitzvot. And the idea that there are 613 mitzvot, which is less explicit in Shabbos, the more in the end of Makos, but it's not a fundamental halachic principle. And there are those Shonim who questioned if it even is true. So what nafkamina of that is even more obscure. It's usually there for a theoretical lumdish nafkamina. So that has not so much relevance in terms of trying to figure this out. So there are those who maintain, and that's what's going on. We have essentially 39 separate psukim, even though we don't. Havar L'chalek Yotzis created 39 different psukim. We mentioned yesterday a somewhat complex point that with C. Pesach Frank, he thought this is going to come out the opposite way. Because this is only true if you believe the source is indeed from our Lagos. But it could be that we don't paskin that way. The whole question the Gemara is dealing with of why we have a separate pasuk about Havara, Lo Savaru Eish B'chol Moshe Osechem. So there are other answers. It could be that it's there to tell us that setting a fire is not a destructive act, is not mekalkel, and counts as a malacha. So if that's the case, chiluk malachos comes from somewhere else. And if the Tosfos, right, Gemara gave us other choices, Gemara and Dafayim. So if indeed that havara is the source for the idea of not only bringing different karbanos, but treating it like 39 separate prohibitions, maybe we lost that source by not passing it. That's a complicated point, but essentially that's what Rishi Pesach Frank says. Maybe this whole vort doesn't really work. Okay, so there's a lot You know, there are many who think that that is the case, that we treat these 39 Golochos like 39 Psukim, and that could explain it. And there are others who are not so thrilled with that approach.
Jonathan? No,
okay. So
we started to say, yeah, so what was the issue with the
His issue is that maybe that Havara is used for something else, used for a different thing. So it's not the source for Kilo Malachos for the Karbanos Malachos.
It's not the source, sorry?
We still end up with
Malachos. Right, but Kilo Malachos doesn't mean Kilo Psukim, it doesn't mean Kilo Lavin. So the idea that Kilo Malachos and Kilo Lavin are connected ideas comes from that source. If we don't like that source, we no longer have any source if we're treated like separate prohibitions. It's one prohibition that has different different ways to violate it, each gets its own independent existence. So therefore, it's not enough to justify maybe a Kudu Din in Hasra.
You say that lower level, whatever the reason is, that each gets their own Karbanos, even though it's not even allowed, would be the same reason to allow different Hasra.
It's hard to say, because again, we need probably more of a source. So since we don't have any context that tells us that Hasra has to take on anything more specific, and the pasuk, even the pasuk, you don't have a source for it, so you're just assuming it. So it's hard to say that there's enough to justify such a thing that's going to mess up the whole concept of relaxing. We probably need a little bit more than that. So that's also going to be a question I'm about to say. And I want to mention perhaps a different approach we could take if we're not necessarily going to focus on the chiluk malachos concept. Perhaps we could come at it from a different angle. I'm not sure if this angle is correct, but it's worth a thought. If it's not correct, you can take it on level of drush. And, the Gemara in the beginning of Sanhedrin, and the Ches, the Gemara talks about this whole question of what Hasra is for. And there is a machlokas about whether a Talmud Chacham, a Chaver, needs Hasra. We just say that somebody who doesn't necessarily have a reputation for knowing the Torah. So if he's doing an Aveira, we need to clarify that he knows he's doing an Aveira. So that's what Hasra is for. But if you see the chief rabbi doing an Aveira, okay, so he clearly knows, so therefore Hasra is not necessary. So that's the question. Gemara wants to know, do we say Chavir Tzarech Hasra or not? The Talmud Chacham di Hasra. And Gemara seems to tie it to this question. Do we say that the whole purpose of Hasra is v'havchin ben shogeg u'mezid, that we need to know, is it an intentional variant or not? So if he's a Talmud Chacham, he knows what the Torah says. So he's an intentional variant. While if he's not, maybe he doesn't know, so then we have to tell him. So the Rambam in the same halacha, he gets everyone all riled up because he mixes the points. He says, a Talmud Chacham also means Hasra, Chaver Tzarech Hasra. Why? Because Hasra is only there to distinguish between Shogeg u'Mezid. Essentially, he took the two halves of the puzzle together, and it seems like the wrong way. It sounds like from the Gemara that if it's just there to tell you the difference between Shogeg u'Mezid, so then Talmud Chacham does need it. So you hear me saying Talmud Chacham does need it because it's there to distinguish between Shogeg u'Mezid. So what's going on there? So perhaps you could say as follows. Kesef Mishnah already tips you off to the fact that maybe the Rambam is using the term Shogeg u'Mezid differently than the Gemara. He doesn't fully explain it. He said maybe the Rambam means Shogeg u'Mezid in a way that Talmid Chachamim and non-Talmid Chachamim are equal. What's he talking about? So perhaps we could suggest as follows. Maybe there is a fundamental difference between the Rambam and all the other Rishonim in terms of what Hasra is for. Why do we need this whole process of warning somebody? Why is that a necessary part of the process of getting punished? So we could say that we just need to know. Do you know what you're doing? You don't know what you're doing. Up or down, it's a yes or no question. Do you know it's an aveira or you don't know it's an aveira? if that's the whole question, so the truth is a Talmid Chacham could equally not know. Because there are other reasons why you don't know. You don't know the Torah. That's one reason. But maybe you do know the Torah, and you don't know the facts of the situation. Or you forgot the facts of the situation. You forgot to be Mechal Shabbos. You don't know today's Shabbos. So for whatever reason, you don't know the correct date, the Talmud Chacham could also not know the correct date. You can know Shabbos backwards and forwards and not know when today is. So does he know the prohibition of Chol Shabbos? For sure. He doesn't know today's Shabbos. He's about to eat non-kosher food. He may know your day backwards and forwards and not be aware that the food he's eating happens to be something else. So maybe the Rambam is just interested in up or down. It fits with what the Kesef Mishnah describes the Rambam's opinion. That the Rambam just wants to know up or down. Does he know? Does he not? So for that, the Talmud Chacham is part of the group as well. There may be the other Rishonim. They see Hasra as something a little deeper. And Hasra is not just to know, are you aware or not? But it's also to know, do you have an appreciation for how you were violating the Torah? Do you have some sense of what the meaning is? And it's interesting in this vein, and we have a din, Mar says in the Suras, which is a very surprising requirement that comes up in Hasra, that as hard as it is to get executed in the Sanhedrin, if you want to get yourself executed in Sanhedrin, you have to hire a very fancy lawyer to do it, because it's very hard not to get off. It's the opposite of other legal systems. You have to hire a fancy lawyer to get off. Here you have to hire a fancy lawyer to get you executed, because it's very hard to do everything the right way. So one of the issues is, besides the fact that you need to have the two agents giving you Hasra, and you have to accept the Hasra beforehand, there's also a requirement that you can't allow Toch Kedei Dibur to elapse between the Hasra and the Avera. How long is Toch Kedei Dibur?
3 seconds.
How much?
3 seconds.
3 seconds, 2 seconds, maximum 9 seconds. Sorry? So the upper limit is, let's say, 9 seconds. So if you allow 9 seconds to elapse between the issuing of the Hasra and the Avera, Hasra expires after 9 seconds. So why should that be? So Rashi and other Rishonim say, we're worried maybe he forgot. What a teller, right? From an academic perspective, that's how quickly students forget. You can imagine you do Hasra, you're about to kill somebody. 15 seconds pass. He does it there and he kills a guy. I warned you. Yeah, that was like 30 seconds ago. You don't remember? It's very hard to understand why you think that the person is going to forget if 9 seconds pass. So there's a whole discussion about this in the Exodus. What exactly does this mean? And there is a, if you ever read, they came the Shiurim from Zalman Henry Goldberg on Hilchos Avos. In the introduction, he talks about general principles, how to remember everything you learn. If you want to know how to remember everything that you learn, he has steps and advice on how to do that in the context. He talks about this issue, about what exactly the Rishonim talking about saying you're going to forget something so quickly. Hard to believe that's the case. So Rav Soloveitchik explained about this, that the purpose of Hasra is not just to figure out, you know that there's an Aveira in what you're doing. It's a little bit more specific than that. The way he described it is that the purpose of Hasra, saying we're going to execute somebody, we're only going to execute somebody who's not just knowingly guilty, but what you might call RRG, or really, really guilty. How are you really, really guilty? Not just that you're aware there's an Aveira, or somebody asks you afterwards, didn't you know that was us, or, oh yeah, Tak, you mentioned it, I did learn that once. I can access it in my memory bank somewhere. But it's more than that. You're thinking about it right now. The purpose of Hasra is to verify that as you're doing the Avera, you're thinking about the fact that it's Asr, and you're doing it anyway. So essentially, the way he understood it is to ascertain, Adhechan hu korei kol, how far have you gone in throwing off the yoke of Torah? How far, how much of a rebellion are you doing? are you willing not only just to do whatever you want, just to violate the code if you feel like it, but even as you are actively thinking about the fact that you've been issued a warning, you're still going to do it to that extent. See, if that's the case, maybe we could suggest that part of Hasra is not just knowing that it's awesome, but having some level of connection to the idea, some level of appreciation. So when it comes to other Isurim, they're pretty black and white. So you say, don't kill someone. All right, you can understand how killing somebody violates the Torah's instruction not to kill someone. But when it comes to Malacha, as we've been seeing, the definition, the application of the term Malacha is a little bit more of a complicated story. So it's conceivable you'll have somebody doing some act, which is one of the 39 Malachos, which is not going to take him much effort at all. You see he's about to flip on a light switch, whatever it is. You see he's about to be boater or something. And you say, oh no, don't work on Shabbos. He says, don't worry, I have no intention of working, I'm just going to be boater this. But he doesn't see that as any kind of a labor. So the connection between the pasuk and the action is much less obvious. So perhaps if we need the person not only to recognize that he's on notice, even more, but to have some level of appreciation for what he's doing wrong, so maybe Shabbos is unique in that the Torah's prohibition is more vague, is less clear, and therefore there's a greater need to go into more detail. So whether or not it's 39 separate prohibitions, the detail is necessary because otherwise the individual doesn't see a connection between the Avera you've identified and what he's actually doing. Hi.
Yeah, so you're basically saying that if someone's, you know, doing more, I say, you know, don't do malacha, and they say, what are you talking about, not killing any light bulbs, and he does it, he does a borer, that's considered mazer or not. He's so got a job, but it didn't mean anything.
You're saying you didn't, in the case where you don't identify the out, you just say malacha?
Right.
So that's, it could be these rishonim, if you are rishonim, you say, you need hasra v'shei ha'av. And they'll say to your question, no, then that doesn't count. The whole point is that just saying malach is not enough because it won't mean anything. So even though it's hard to see why that should be the case because malach is a prohibition of the Torah, that should be enough. So what we're suggesting here is exactly what you're asking, that maybe in the case of malach, it's not going to have any meaning unless we go a step further and we clarify what we're talking about.
And also, sometimes what people say is that there's generalized the term malach as muktzah.
Well,
so, right, so let's say, you know, someone's about to start a fire, and don't do that, it's muksa. Is that a problem with Shra or not?
Probably not. When the kids talk that way also, the children, it's a convenient term to identify everything that's all good.
I don't know why muksa is so much of a harder word.
Right, muksa is really a whole different concept, so right. That would be certainly no better than saying the wrong out. Right? Even these Tosfos that say you don't have to say the out, say you can't say the wrong out. So if you would say muksa, okay, to an adult, only, Bar Onsh is only an adult anyway, who's old enough to...
It wouldn't be oneself.
Sorry?
It wouldn't be oneself.
Right, so also...
It wouldn't be the wrong guy.
It wouldn't be the one who's tied recently, not tied recently, because he wouldn't be the one who's tied recently. Right, it wouldn't be the one who's tied recently. Right, so presumably that would be the issue. John?
So according to this last idea that was suggested that the word Shabbos might be different because it's more complex, but the Rambam doesn't seem to be...
We're putting Rambam in a different camp in terms of what Hasra is about.
Right.
Now, the Rambam seems to have a different goal for Hasra. He doesn't care what his name is. Because that's why the Talmud Chacham, according to the others, would say a Talmud Chacham is different. Because we can assume what Talmud Chacham does understand. He does know that Malach includes Borer and Bona and Kosei. But somebody who's not Talmud Chacham may not understand. So maybe for a non-Talmud Chacham, we need Hasra to make him understand that there's an Aveira in what he's doing. So that's for the other Rishonim. The Rambam, who perhaps sees it as just an up and down question. We just need to know. You know or you don't know. So if I tell you it's Usser, you don't have to know why, you don't have to ask the questions, just fire off. You recognize it's Usser, you're on notice. It's a different conception of what Hasra is about. So that might perhaps explain why it is that there is a greater responsibility when it comes to Shabbos. And it could perhaps also correlate to a different idea, that the Chuvas from Tzal Ashkenazi, which I put on the Marmar Papa, so that I can apologize for the wrong number. Thank you, Corey, for trying to get a copy of the wrong number, which one it is, on the test. We'll look it up. Not that there could be another edition that would come out that later found it on the test. That the Chuvas from Tzal Ashkenazi, Tzal Ashkenazi was the one who compiled the Sheet of the Kubetzes. And he also has his Chuvas. So he says there's only one Av that needs Hasrah B'Shein Av. In general, all violations of Shabbos, if you're doing 38 malachas, it's enough to say you're doing Rechal Shabbos. Only one malacha needs Hasra B'Shein Ha'av. Which one would that be? Did he guess what?
Havar
would have been a decent guess, but he says actually a different one. Hotzah. Hotzah, yes. Why Hotzah?
It's
a gruah. It's a lousy malacha that gets no respect. Right? So what does that mean? If you can say that Hotzah is a lousy malacha, so if you follow the idea, and we mentioned Rishonim have different ways of understanding what's so disrespected about Hotzah, why is it treated with a different level of attention? So it could be because people don't see it as really doing anything. That other, the 38 other malachos, whether you put a lot of significance in them or not, at least to some extent change the world. And Hotzah doesn't seem to change the world, doesn't seem to do anything. So therefore, according to this idea, perhaps it's that Hotzah is uniquely difficult for people to relate to. So if you see somebody about to start a fire, about to build a house, about to write the great American novel, and you say to him, you're violating Shabbos, okay, he'll understand I'm violating Shabbos. If you see somebody put something in his pocket, head for the door, and you say, you're about to violate Shabbos, well, what are you talking about? They're not doing anything. So perhaps if you follow this whole approach, if that's what it's about making sure they have some appreciation for how they are violating the Torah. So maybe even within this idea, you can distinguish between Hotzah and the other Avos. Now Hotzah is uniquely difficult to relate to. Now, this idea, of course, really draws upon a lot of other concepts that we've been talking about throughout. The whole relationship between Avos and Tolos and Avos to each other, and what is the difference between one Av and the next. And also this whole idea of trying to understand what the different Malachos, how they play out, so that how they manifest themselves is relevant here as well. I think I may have mentioned to some guys, maybe in private, that there is a interesting discussion in general in terms of the derivation that we've been talking about throughout of the Lamentas Malachos. If you look at Rav Yosef Engel, we mentioned in the past, has a sefer directly on Shas as well, called Bilyonei HaShas. And on the Gemara and Mentes, with the Gemara which we talked about a few weeks ago, which talks about the derivation of the Malachos. So he suggests there that the Malachos are in a category which some of the Rishonim associated with Chol HaMoed. Concept that you shouldn't do malacha on Chol HaMoed, the Tosfos and Megiga and Dati Ches, and others who talk about the question of what's the nature of the prohibition of malacha on Chol HaMoed. Is it an Issur D'Rabbanan? Some of the Gemaras kind of sound like that. Has a approach which sounds very rabbinical in nature? Or is it Issur D'Oraisa? So some of the Rishonim understand that it's somewhere in between. There's a category called Masar HaKaf L'Chamer, which is an expression from the Gemara, which essentially means that it's a Din Min HaTorah, but the parameters were given to the Rabbanon to figure out. We mentioned before, we're talking about the Taz, the capital T Taz, who says that you can't, Din Min Rabbanon can't contradict the Torah. We said that David Cohen has a whole essay about this. So he has also a whole essay about this question, about the idea of Masar HaKaf L'Chamer, about concepts that the Torah assigned to the Rabbanan to figure out how they apply. So the Rishonim say this could be true about Malachas Chol HaMoed. And Rav Yosef Engel quotes an idea in his commentary to the Shas that this could also be true even about Malacha Shabbos, perhaps. So again, there's a certain mystery about that, which is at the root of a lot of what we're talking about, but it could also affect this specific halacha that Tosfos is considering whether or not it exists. The idea of Hasra B'Shein Ha'av maybe reflects again some detail of how some aspect of the whole nature of how the Avos are brought into the conversation and how they're divided from each other. Okay, so far so good? Yeah, more or less makes sense? Okay, so now for essentially our final Zareya topic, not counting our halachic discussions, but our final Zareya topic for now, the question of the Avos and Toldos as they relate to Zareya. So you may have seen, hopefully you saw a little bit, that there are a number of views in the Rishonim how to relate to the line in the Gemara, which is very similar to what we'll see in a couple of the other Malachos as well. Right, this whole Omid is like this. In Gimel and Beis, you find this a bunch of times. Every time it starts off Malach, it has a line like this. So here, in the context of Zareya, so the Gemara says, HaZareya v'HaZomer v'HaNoteya v'HaMavrich v'HaMarkiv Kulon Malach HaAchasim. So if you plant, if you prune, if you plant a tree or a sapling, we'll call it Noteya that for now, or HaMavrich, you take something, you take an existing plant and you take the top of it and you stick it back into the ground, or HaMarkiv, you graft something. So all of those are considered to be one Malach. That's a vague statement though. What does that mean, it's one Malacha? Does it mean you have an Avos Toldos relationship there? Or does it mean they're all really one Malacha? They're all essentially occupying one slot. Right, so as we'll see in a moment, there are at least four different approaches to this issue in the Rishonim. Four different ways of counting between the five Malachos that we just read off. How many of those are Avos and how many of those are Toldos? And you might say, well, wait a minute, how could any more than one of them be an Av? Our Mishnah only lists one of them. And there's 39 Malachos who used up all the slots in the Mishnah. So if we include anything more than Zareya on the Av list, we're essentially saying that it's not really a separate Av, but it's the same Av. Either it's a broad way of saying that word, it's a broader way of applying that same Av, or it's a concept of Me'ein Malach Achas, that it's another Av that's in the same spirit as that Av, and therefore it occupies one slot. The best way to relate to this, and we'll talk about this more in a little while, has to do with Bishul and Afil. And we know that they only occupy one slot. Bishul is such a major, major Malach in Hilchos Shabbos, it's not on our list. And we talked about that in terms of the different questions of how to derive the Malacha. So they derived from the building of the Mishkan where there was no Afiyah, or is it derived from the Avodos HaMishkan where there was Lechem HaPanim? So essentially, the Mishnah lists Afiyah, doesn't list Bishul, and the assumption is that Bishul and Afiyah are both Avos, but they're both sharing the same slot. So they're like 11a and 11b. So here, if we're going to say, for example, if one were to take the view that all five of these are Avos, and so Zareya, we're calling for our purposes the first Malacha, but alternatively say it's the second Malacha, we'll call it one. So maybe this is Avos 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D, 1E. So let's look a little bit at the different interpretations in the Rishonim of what these Avos are, what's an Av and what's a Tolda, and let's try to figure out as we go along why we would say one way and why we would say the other way. Why would we say something's an Av? Why would we say it's a Tolda? And all we really know so far is that Avos seem to come from the Mishkan, even though we've left room for some ambiguity. Do they include all the Mishkan activities or just the Chashuv ones? Right, we mentioned in the first day that the beginning of Bava Kamma we have this expression, Hachtiba Mishkan Chashiva, which is either one standard or two standards. Either the Mishkan equals Chashivas, or it's in the Mishkan or Chashiv, or both. Maybe it has to be both Mishkan and Chashiv. So we have still some ambiguity as to what's going to make the cut as an Av. So let's try to figure out if we assume that somehow we get an Av, and that a Tolda is somehow derived from the Av, is somehow based on its relationship, on its similarity to the Av. So where are we drawing our lines? Why are we drawing the lines one way, or why the other ways? Let's try to look at the various Rishonim and see how we come out on this issue. So if you look first at Rashi, So what does Rashi say? That kulon malacha, kulon malacha achas, saying the top of ayin gimel of beis, right? The zomer nami litzmuche lanahu, right? That zomer is also for the purposes of making a tree sprout. Then to skip a few words here, so zoreya av malacha, vinoteya nami av malachahu, dahayu zoreya, elosha zeb is roim zeb ilanos. So zoreya is an av, noteya is also an av. The difference between the two just being that zoreya is with seeds and noteya is with trees. Vechein mavrichu markiv. Apparently also avos, although it's a vague way of saying it because he just tells you these are also avos, doesn't say how they are so lucky to be grouped with Zareya and Noteya. Okay, but they're also apparently also avos because the next one is not. Aval Zomer, Toldo. Zomer is a Toldo. So how would we understand Rashi? So we'll start with his view. Why would Rashi put those four into one category and the only thing that doesn't make the cut is Omer? Yo?
Those are all actually on the tree that you're like planting in some way to create a nutrient, opposed to the Omer, which you're taking something off the tree to help it grow.
So I think the second half of the sentence is more relevant than the first half of the sentence. First half of the sentence might be relevant to other Rishonim. The key word was in the second part of the sentence. What am I trying to zero in on? No, that part is the part that would make it closer to an av. What word am I most interested in the words you just said? Say?
Cutting something off.
Right? That's very likely what bothers Rashi. That maybe for Rashi we could say a straightforward type of explanation of the av-tolda relationship. That essentially, what's an av? An av is a certain act that has a form and a function. A way of doing it and a purpose of doing it. And if you only have the function, but you don't have the form, then you have a tolda. So apparently he thinks, so he says all of these malachos, he says right at the beginning, they're all tzmuche ara. Right? They are all there for the same purpose. So we can all put them within the Zareya family because they all share a function. But what about form? If we say they need both, they need form and function to be an av, we can already say they're all at least on the table because they all share a function. So they're all at least tolas. But they have to have the same surah, same form to have an av. So we can figure out where we draw our line as far as how we want to define the form. If we use a broad definition, we're going to include more things. If we use a very specific definition, we're going to include fewer things. But apparently, what is it that really puts Zomer outside the pale? So it seems to be, as Sammy and Gil are saying together, that essentially the issue is cutting off. Cutting off is really the opposite, as many Achronim point out, it's the opposite of all the other actions. All the other actions involve putting something in, connecting something, doing some type of contribution to the process, and here you are taking away. So it's still considered to be in the Zareya family because you're taking away for the purpose of growth. So that's what makes it a tolda of Zareya. But only a tolda because if we look at the form is fundamentally different. It's, in fact, the opposite. Who's up first? I'll go first.
So according to this understanding of Rashi, that we need the specific form, mm-hmm. How do we appreciate what was said in Yerushalmi about, let's say, the defense of the thing out of the worms or something like that?
So it could be they're all toldas.
They
could be told us. It's not necessarily impossible to say that. You know, it's no different than this line. Right? We have this line in the Gemara which associates all these actions with Zareya, right. And the possibility remains open that they could be anything that told us or avos. So too, I don't think Yerushalmi is any more exclusive of that range of possibilities. Okay, yes.
Say similar to that conversation, an av or told us like watering. Mm-hmm. You say it's about just taking removing from the system,
mm-hmm.
That's
from
Zomer, then that might be a
total,
an
op. Water might be better. Water, and we'll contrast, and when we come back to the Rambam's view, we'll see how.
If you say the main point is that the four of these things are just the it all involves some type of planting.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually planting something. Working it through the ground is planting. Notea is planting a tree, and sorry, it's actually planting. It's not so much about removing, but that's what's just encouraging growth, actually beginning the growth process, or right?
Mm-hmm.
The growth process. So then you could push the line in the other side of watering, and that while it's encouraging growth, it's not planting a new root, and therefore you get told.
So while you're encouraging growth, the last sentence again? So while you're encouraging growth, which act is encouraging growth?
The issue of zomer.
Right.
The issue of zomer is not that it's just removing something from the system,
mm-hmm.
But the form has to be about planting something anew, which
mm-hmm.
is four things I'll have. Then where you put watering would shift, as opposed to being an ab, because now it's
encouraging.
Yeah,
it's the same. Within Rashi, you can use a different chibur,
yeah.
Not focus on the taking away, but focus on a new point, and we'll see other Rishonim. New might be a factor that's even more specific.
Yeah.
But here, I assume what you mean by new, because, for example, if you talk about breathing, it's really not new. You're taking two existing things and putting them together. So you're saying the new combination, which we'll see may fit within more within another Rishonim even more. But perhaps it works here as well, that if you have a new entity, some type of new growth, then that's the problem, while Zomer is essentially a continuation of growth. So a continuation of growth is a type of total. It's an interesting idea. The problem is, so the question is, does that really fit in with a basic Av Tolda type of distinction? Because when we're talking about your action, essentially, if you're going to assume that Zomer on an action level is comparable enough to the other four, and you're distinguishing not because the action is so fundamentally different, but because it's about old growth versus new growth, or continuing growth versus initial growth. So then it seems like the form you're accepting is broad enough to include both. So where's the difference? The difference is in function, which could be the definition of a tolda also, but it's imposing a whole new definition on Rashi. Maybe that the tolda could be missing, which like Rav Zalman Meltzer, for example, says that a tolda is missing either a form or a function. So here, just to be aware of what you're saying, you're flipping it. You're saying that maybe Zomer actually shares form, and really it's where the function is that it's different.
You can say that both are fine.
If you're missing both, so then it's an interesting question of whether we should call that a tolda or not. If it's neither, if it doesn't share either the right form or enough of the function, so maybe that's not going to really make the cut. No pun intended.
Or, initially, we're suggesting is that it's the same form.
Right, but what you're saying now is that, right, so if you're saying a chiddush, it sounds like for Rashi that it's likely not the same form. That's probably the issue. Right. So you're saying a chiddush that maybe a taka is the form, and the function is a difference, which is possible. It's flipping the whole perspective.
Say the form is about replanting something.
See, if you're going to say that, so then what does Zomer have? If it's losing on the form and the function, so if continuing is the same, that's what it sounds like from Rashi. But it sounds like what you were saying before is that there's a difference between continuing and initiating. And if that's the case, we could pick one or the other, but if we make it missing on both fronts, then it may not even qualify as a tolda. Although, as we'll see in a few minutes, there could be grandchildren among the toldas as well, which may bring it back into the story. But so far, we haven't seen that yet, so far, it sounds like we need to at least connect on one of the fronts. So we could pick one. Either the problem could be the form is different, or the problem could be what you're saying, that the function essentially changes. But for now, we'll say it would probably have to be one or the other. We'll see in a few minutes, maybe there could be grandchildren in the picture too. Hi.
Why isn't Maverick also that you're taking away something? Because you're really taking something from one tree and moving it and making it to another.
Well, you're not taking it away. Maverick meaning that where you're taking something
and
replanting while it's still connected.
Right.
Right. So you're saying it gets a new source of
right.
the Anika. So that's called taking it away, really? You're not physically taking it away. You're
right. Yeah, I mean, you're not cutting it off. But
right.
Saying,
so that's a difference, especially because it's missing that. Essentially, the focus of what you're doing is that you're putting it in. The fact that it may now get nourishment from there instead of somewhere else is really a secondary result, presumably. Okay, so let's, for now, say that's some perspective within Rashi. The second view that you find is that the Tosfos sounds like this. You have to read the Tosfos carefully to see how he says it. If you look in the Ritva quotes from his Rebbe this a little bit more clearly, that what's the second view? There are essentially two avos here. What are the two avos? Zareya and Noteya. Those two are the top tier, and everything else is a total. So how would you say that? Why would you put those two in one category and everything else in a different category? Any thoughts on that front? Bill?
It's a normal way to plan.
So is that more normal than the other ones?
Yeah. Mavra.
Yeah, well, that's something that farmers do too.
Like with the Mishkan. Like,
oh, so you're saying if you want to say it's a Mishkan comparison. So the truth is, right, that is a possible explanation, that maybe that's the case. And we'll reflect back in a few minutes. We'll see why that has even more validity than it may seem. Then maybe it's right. Maybe it simply sounds like from Shalom, but that's what was done in the Mishkan. That's one possibility. Mike, do you want to say about that?
The continuation of the Gemara seems to offer two options. Either Mishkan or Dara Mishkan, right?
So that, you say the Gemara, the textual,
actually, that sounds like... Those are the two options.
Okay, so we have, let's say, different levels of looking at this question. We could either just try to read the words of the Gemara and see what clues we find, like you're saying, or we could say that we could put together the fact that we know the Mishkan has to be involved and look at the Yerushalmi, which tells us Noteya was done there as well. Or we could try to, Svara-wise, see how it might be different one way or another. Sammy?
It's the exact same actions. One's for a tree, one's
for... Oh, okay. So maybe that's the idea, that maybe we can define the action in such a way that does seem to be some support for doing that, that to say that really Zoreya and Noteya are both about putting something in the ground, and the others... Not so. Is that really true? Not so? How is it? Is it, you have to say it a little bit sharper. What's the difference between the way Zoreya and Noteya put things in the ground and the others, Adam?
Maybe it creates something new as opposed to putting existing.
Oh, okay. So maybe we have to say like that. Right? There's some Svara who take that approach also.
Isn't Noteya doing.
Sorry?
What,
you have a sapling, right? You're taking, which could be a very young sapling. Or could even be a seed of a tree. Right, Noteya actually is a different definition. Noteya could actually even include a tree seed, so to speak, as opposed to a plant seed. Or a sapling also could be buried, could be planted for the first time. So it seems like that's a viable distinction as well. Like Adam is saying, that maybe putting something in the ground for the first time is the form of Zoreya. So Zoreya and Noteya are essentially the same thing. They just have different tools that are different subjects that are doing what they do. But everything else is a way of either, like Toby said before, cultivating further growth, or in the case of Mavrich and Markiv, replanting, so to speak. So replanting, maybe that's already fundamentally different than initial planting. Yes?
Isn't that Rashi's suggestion? And this wouldn't be able to agree with Rashi's others.
Well, we're now dealing now with Rashi. The Rashi doesn't. Rashi includes more than just.
He also said that the main difference is one relates to seed and one.
Yeah, it's the difference between Zoreya and Noteya. The question is now, why should we call those both avos and not the other things avos? So we have to then zero in on the comparison between the two. You could use Rashi's words to explain this. It's not his shita, right? You could take those words and put that into the Rishonim who say this and make that a crucial part of the process. Yeah, that's. That's going to fit. Hi.
The good question is that this comes from the Tosos and the Han Misra.
Right.
Where does he see that?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a complicated. You have to, we talk about it after, it'll take a lot of time to say, but you have to kind of confess out the Tosos kind of day. But that's, many assume that's what the Tosos is saying as well. But the Ritva himself is the clearer source. At least the Ritva says it, and Tosos seems to be saying it as well. The third view, which we could talk about, would be the Rambam. What does the Rambam maintain? How many avos do we have out of these five candidates? Five. Right? They're all avos, according to the Rambam. So, what is the rule here, then? It seems to be he has a very broad definition. Right? That what is the category of av, according to him? Right? Smuchei Lana, that anything that shares that function. So apparently he's willing to have a broad definition of what's included in that initial av. And if you look at the Magen Mishnah over there, I think you put on the Marma Komus, and what does the Magen Mishnah say? That he gives you a subjective definition, which is a little hard to work with practically. If you ever end up being a posek in the Beis HaMikdash times in terms of avos and toldos issues, Or if you go back in time and have to sit on the Sanhedrin that's going to figure this out already. So this is very challenging, because he essentially says, what's the difference? If it's doime b'dimion gomer, it's an av. Meaning if it totally matches. So in other words, it's not that it's doime, it's that it is. You know, that we define the av broadly enough, so that includes these other categories. Whatever it includes is an av. And if it's doime b'miktsas, it's a little bit similar, so then that's a tolva. That's a subjective categorization, right? It's a little bit more objective if we said one of the other ways. If we want to say that form and function is an av, different form, same function is a tolva, you know, that's a semi-objective standard. If we want to say, like, the other possibility that either form or function but not both is a tolva, that's also a semi-objective standard. Using this idea of dimyun gomer versus dimyun sas is very subjective. So what is it that makes it? Essentially what the Magen Mishnah seems to be saying is that we'll figure out what an av is, we'll figure out what the parameters are. Well, probably be, it sounds like in this Rambam, pretty broad. And then whatever's within those parameters, that's an av. And then something that's similar enough but doesn't make the cut is a tolva. Not necessarily any form-function issue, but it has some type of half comparison that's not all the way. So that's a difficult standard to work with. Hi.
Can you just say that he's saying the same thing about form and function, but they've just defined all five of these as sharing both form and function, and now anything else that has another or would be dimyon, not dimyon gomer.
Right, she's saying once we already said his definition is broad enough to include all of these on the same heading, so it means he's giving them all the same form and function. It's just that those words, I guess, tend to lose their meaning. You're right that that would be the way to say it, but they have more objective meanings in the other context. Right? Once we say that this is all somehow the same form and the same function, then the difference between form and function and surah pula all kind of fades away. So it seems to preserve more value here for us to say that this is separate from those considerations. It's just, you know, like you do an internet search and it comes up with 99% relevance, 98% relevance. So here, apparently, so 80 and above is an av, and 50 to 80 is a tolva, apparently. So clearly this is a subjective type of judgment. It's a little difficult to figure out. So one of the clues we could try to use that the Achronim discuss relates to what Tavi brought up before. So when it comes to watering the field, so watering the field, the Rambam understands that to be a tolva of Zareya. We'll get into that a little bit more when we talk about Choresh. So why is it that watering is going to be a tolva and all five of these are not? Yes, sir?
Something they do directly to the plant.
Oh, very good. So that's how some Achronim say, and that makes a lot of sense. So then maybe the dividing line here is that all five of these at least involve the plant directly, even though other than that they have very little in common. All they have in common is that they're all promoting growth, somehow acting upon the plant itself, while watering acts upon the externality, acts upon the area around the plant. Okay, so that could be. Maybe that's the difference between... that's where you don't make the cut to actually be a dimyun gomer. But again, that's it's a rather subjective interpretation. Okay, so far so good. It's also interesting to note, if you look at the Eglei Tal suggests to kind of minimize the differences between Rashi and the Rambam, because essentially the only difference between Rashi and the Rambam is Zomer. Rashi put it outside the camp, and the Rambam leaves it inside the camp. So if you want to confuse things further, as if we don't have enough possible distinctions here, it could be that not all Zomer is Zomer. It could be there are different types of Zomer. Maybe there is a constructive Zomer and a protective Zomer. That maybe there's a Zomer I do because I'm afraid something is going to hurt my plant, so I'm cutting it away. And maybe there's a Zomer that actually promotes productive growth. So if you say that, you could suggest that maybe the Rambam and Rashi aren't arguing, and that really they're talking about different types of Zomer, in which case you'd have to really re-theorize either position. If you want to include a type of zomer. Let's say for Rashi, you want to say that the productive zomer is going to be an av, so then we have to change our definitions that we used before about whether it's the opposite pu'ula and the like. But just be aware that the Eglei Tal throws that into the mix to further give you more avenues to be confused. And that also just raised the possibility that, we'll see this again in a few minutes, that not all these words always mean the same thing. That maybe Zomer means one thing here or one thing there, and maybe it has different types. Yes?
I don't remember which Marmachon, but in one of the Rashis, it was talking about if these blossoms grow on a tree or something, and you cut them, like these wet blossoms, and you cut them off so they don't dry up the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But it was talking about Horish, so why would that be in Zomer? Why would that be in...
I have to figure out which. Do you remember which Rashi you're talking about?
No, I'll look it up.
We'll talk about it afterwards. Okay, so far we've seen three different conceptions of what this Gemara means in terms of dividing it up. A very consequential view is the fourth view, which is essentially that of Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel, who's on our daf, so he understands that. How do we divide up out of the five candidates? How many of them make it? According to Rabbeinu Chananel? One. Which one? That's not a hard guess. Zoraya. Right, we know that one's on the list. That's for sure makes it. So Zoraya is the Malacha. Everything else is not. So why would you make such a division? Why would you draw your line there and put everything in the total can? So that's the simplest way of saying it. As we'll see in a second before anybody mentions any Rishalmis, it's complicated by an external source. But it seems to be that is perhaps the most direct way of saying things. It's a simple Mishkan parallel. And if we look to the Mishkan, so we find Zareya that way perhaps, assuming the Metzias is that's the case. And we'll discuss that in a minute. And you're going to ask for Notea?
Yeah.
Yes, I say all external sources move aside for a second. But if we were to maintain that in the Mishkan they just did Zareya this way, that could theoretically explain.
Even that, okay, by the Mishkan you would have to get the Arzi and the Levanon.
Correct. So that kasha is raised. Let's say before we get to that, come to that in a second. But this does seem to be one possible hanocha of Mr. Ben Chananel, as challengeable as it might be. Especially because the Ramach, which has a similar idea, the Ramach is quoted in the Kesef Mishnah. The Rambam, who focuses explicitly on this idea of the Mishkan being specifically this type of Zoreya. So if that's true, is there a question about that?
There's a question about the Chananel.
Yes.
Still the second middle stage of Chlad?
Yes, so that's, we'll get to that in a second. Also has additional stages, the other major finish is the same. So Rav Asher Weiss points out that if you follow that view, that it's only what was direct, the only thing that's going to make the Av, is what was literally in the Mishkan. So then, that's problematic, because then what we're saying, if we follow Rashi's view, is that, or if we follow, say, Rav Haigon's view, then, so we follow Rav Haigon's view, so Afia makes the cut, but Bishul doesn't. The famous Malach of Bishul is not an Av, according to this. It sounds very hard to maintain. And it sounds very hard to believe that should be the case, that Bishul, which takes up so much time in Hilchos Shabbos, is not enough. So that is a shocking idea. However, he points out that there is a Rabbeinu Chananel on Ayin Dalet Amud Beis where he quotes from Yerushalmi that says just that. That it's Rabbeinu Chananel on Ayin Dalet Amud Beis. It's right before Dibra Maschil Hahu. The previous Dibra Maschil, right before Hahu, the end of that, says the Eshkechan B'Yerushalmi, the Amar Hachi Yisrami, Afia told us Bishulhu. So it's a surprising idea, but may Taka be the case the way Rabbeinu Chananel understands based on Yerushalmi. So that would be a striking idea. Yes.
Sir?
Right. So very little Nafkamina. There are right for our lives, it's very little Nafkamina. There are Lomdish and Nafkaminas, such as what's also derived from Rabbeinu Chananel, the first Rabbeinu Chananel and Ayin Gimel, is that once he calls everything else a Tolda, So now he introduces the concept we alluded to a few minutes ago of the grandchildren. There's a concept of a tolda de tolda. So essentially here we have three madrigas. We don't just have parents, we have parents, children, and grandchildren. So for example, Zoteya is a tolda of Zoreya, and let's say the other three are going to come out to be toldos of Noteya, or grand toldos of the Av of Zoreya. So how exactly does that work? If the whole point is that something becomes a tolda by being similar somehow to the Av, then presumably the grandchildren are also comparable to the Av. And if you ever read the drashos of the Rav on Kinos that Rabbi J.J. Schachter wrote up and available elsewhere as well, he talks about the whole concept of zchus avos and bris avos. So zchus avos eventually weakens because the Rav gives a whole mashal about somebody who's close, who has a friend who he owes some debt of gratitude to, and therefore he extends the gratitude to this person. And then this person's son eventually shows up. The son looks like the father a little bit, so the person feels some kind of kesher to the son as well. And then eventually the grandson shows up, so the grandson looks a little bit less like the father. So there's some degree of connection, but it gets weaker. And then you get to the great-grandson. This talks about the whole concept of zchus avos, that the extent to which we evoke the memory of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov perhaps gets diluted as time goes along. So we say there's a concept of an av being generating a tolda by something that's similar to it. So what does it mean, a tolda, the tolda? So is it similar to the Av or not? Presumably, if the tolda was similar to the Av, that's how it got its existence. So then the tolda is also similar to the Av. So are we essentially talking in degrees here? Again, the very subjective terminology, like we said before, that a tolda hits 80% relevance on the web search. While tolda tolda hits 50%, or hits 80% of the second level. So it's a lesser percentage of the original. What exactly does it mean to be a tolda to tolda and not a tolda of the Av? That's an interesting question. It opens up all kinds of other avenues. This is something Rav Asher Weiss discusses also. And he notes, you could say, for example, let's say in this case, so Noteya becomes connected to Zoreya because they're both about planting. So, all right, so that puts Noteya onto the table. Then Zomer becomes connected to Noteya because they're both about acting on trees. So essentially you have Zomer connecting to Noteya, but not to Zoreya. So you need the whole chain. Zomer, Zoreya brings about Noteya, and Noteya brings about Zomer. But you wouldn't necessarily be able to connect Zomer and Zoreya according to that type of approach.
Hi. What was the second
Rabbi Yochanan
that we see that
Bishlam is a tolda of Afia? Right, so it's a striking idea. As Adam points out, how much actual nafkamina would it have? Not so much, but it's still hard for us to believe that the famous Bishlam is a tolda. So that's just what Rav Asher Weiss was pointing out, that according to Rabbi Yochanan's logic, if we understand him a certain way, so that's what he means, and the Ramah is more explicit, that's what he means, so then it would come out that even Bishul would be a tolda. And Taka here on Ayin Dalim and Beis, that is what he says. There is what he quotes in the Yisham, so Taka works.
What would be the whole concept of tolda to tolda?
What's what, sorry?
What would be the second step?
That tolda to tolda? I guess the fact that these malachas clearly exist, because the Gemara talks about them, so Ben Hanano, within his theory, is going to need another generation of toldas.
He says that
because
Zeria are their own categories?
Right, because that Zeria is its own category. Noteya is a tolda of that. Everything else is a grandkid.
Hi. So would there be, for this idea of tolas from tolas, is there any nafkamina that would be different than tolas from av, or is it sort of the same relationship?
Probably the same as far as once we have the malacha. In general, as has been pointed out, once the malacha is on the table, it's generally going to be observed the same way. There could be lamdash and nafkaminas. There could be, again, if you're on the Sanhedrin, you have to figure out what's going to be a malacha. So if you're trying to compare something to an av as opposed to a tolda or a tolda to tolda, you may have different rules how you're going to do it. For you and I, it's probably not going to be much difference. I mean, we'll talk eventually, we'll get to malacha and tzriyus al-gufa. For example, there are those who might maintain, depending on how you define either term, that Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa of a Tolga is really at a low level. Because if we want to define, all of this is debatable, but if we want to define a Tolga as function, as form without function, no, all the way around. If we want to define a Tolga as function without form, and we want to define a Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa as form without function, so what's a Tolga Shein Tzricha L'Gufa? No form, no function. So what are you left with? Maybe nothing, maybe something, but maybe something on a relatively low level. So that's something we'll talk about when we get to Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa, which again is on our agenda immediately after Charish, segueing out of Charish. So these are some of the views that come out of these different perspectives. There is a suggestion that some have, of course, because this has to poke its head up in every part of the discussion, that maybe this correlates back to our original Rosh Hashanah and Chasidim. There's at least one contemporary sefer that suggests that maybe that's what's going on with Rabbi Yochananel and everybody else. If you want to put Rabbi Yochananel in one camp and all the others we show them in a different camp, we could say, what exactly is the issue here? Maybe the issue is, what is the Malacha defined as? Is the Malacha defined as bringing about growth, or is it defined as putting a seed in the ground? If it's defined as putting a seed in the ground, all of these other four activities are already somewhat removed, already losing somewhat of that comparison, either because they're putting something other than a seed, or because they're not about putting it in the ground, or they're not about putting anything anywhere. They are significantly, perhaps, removed. While if it's about, and again, there's some subjectivity in how far you want to remove. They're removed at different levels. So, for example, if I want to group noteo with zoreya, like Tosfos and the Ritva, there's basis to do that. But essentially, the suggestion would be that if you take, let's say, a minchas kinuchim view, that it's really all about putting the seed in the ground. So that's really zoreya. That's really going to be the contender for the av. Maybe noteo also, etc. But if we're going to say it's about promoting plant growth, so then that's a broader category which may conceivably include all of these. For example, like a Rambam type perspective. A slightly similar approach, which relates to what we mentioned yesterday. I mentioned the Sefer Meital. I mentioned that he has a whole discussion in general. He thinks all of Zoreya is affected by a related but slightly different question. That is Zoreya about promoting growth? Or is it about not just putting seed in the ground, but about negating the seed to the ground, about being mevatel the seed in the ground? So he wants to suggest that he believes that's the framework that addresses every issue in Zoreya, essentially. So he wants to suggest that if that's the case, then the position of, let's say, Rabbi Yochananel, again, that just putting it in, that's about being vatal to the ground. Nothing else matches that standard. Because let's say, noteya, for example, so you're dealing with something that's half out of the ground. It's not vatal to the karka. So really, either you say that it's about negating the seed to the ground, so it's really like Rabbi Yochananel only zoreya, everything else is a derivation. Or we could say that it's about promoting growth, again, like you mentioned a minute ago, and it's a broader category. I think you could legitimately expand even his first side. And you could say that even if it's about the bittul idea, it's not just, it's not the only way to formulate it to say that it has to be seed completely covered in the ground. You could say that anything that becomes a new entity becomes buckle, in a sense, its own entity gets lost. So you could say, for example, everything except Zomer falls into that category. That either I'm putting a seed, negating a seed to the ground, or I am taking a sapling and making it a planted sapling and giving it a new identity. Or I am grafting something, taking two things and making them into one thing, again, a new identity. Or Markiv is Mavrich is maybe a little bit harder, but maybe that's also about changing its basic existence. So you could perhaps just phrase the question a little differently and perhaps draw the line, like Rashi does, with everything besides Zomer. Say that it's really only Zomer, which only is connected through the fact that it's promoting growth. Before I forget, I just wanted to mention before, some of you who raised the question, or wanted to raise the question, and I cut you off, that to say within Rabbeinu Hananel or the Ramach more explicitly, that the issue is Mishkan. So we do have sources which clearly indicate that there was Netiyah going on in the Mishkan. So how can you use that as a standard and exclude Netiyah? So it's a good question. If you look, there are, for example, Meital discusses that at length. And it could be, once again, similar to what we said about the Anglei Tal beforehand, it could be that there is different usages of the word Noteya. That Noteya might mean different things in different contexts. Then you still have to account for all the sources, which is not a completely glatt procedure. So I believe that is somewhat of a tzarichian on the Ramach, and perhaps the Rabbeinu Hananel if we use this approach. But it's a relevant issue nonetheless. Okay, so we could say, in the very little time we have left, that that essentially brings us to our Zriya close. We discussed a number of major points here. You know, we talked about the Shir for Zriya. We talked about the question of the Rosh Hashanah and the Chasinuch as far as when do you become Chayiv for Zriya. And we talked about various other issues that grow from that. The question of Atzis Nakuv, whether there's planting in Atzis Nakuv. What about Atzis She'eno Nakuv, which opens up the whole question of qualitative, quantitative, of degree changes rather than absolute changes. And the question of the Rambam's idea of soaking seeds in water, what exactly does that represent? Does it open up the possibility of growing within water? Or the idea of preparing for Malacha and various ramifications thereof? And then we got into this question of the various toldos of Zoraya and how they go to this fundamental question of what is an Ava, what is a tolda. And of course, it's going to come up, like I said, for the whole rest, at least of this Amud. Every Malacha starts off this way, listing other actions which seem to connect to the Av in question. Okay, so then with that, we'll segue into Choresh. Not that we really have much more time, but it's the promise that we get up to Choresh today. So you should know there is a Malacha called Choresh. That's Hashem, we'll talk about it. We'll say one more word about it. But we'll talk about it a little bit more in detail. Have to figure out exactly when. Tomorrow is the Parsha day. Stay tuned for announcement how Sunday is going to play out. We have to figure out exactly what the story is. Just to say a word about Choresh, so let's start the discussion this way, and then we'll let you go in a minute. And so the same way we started with Zareya, somebody tell me, translate the concept of Choresh. What is the Malacha of Choresh? Anybody want to help me out? Sorry? Plowing. Okay, so plowing, as far as we've mentioned before, if we have a two-part definition for everything, a form and a function. So plowing seems to be the basic form. What's the function? What's the function of Choresh? Sorry? Avodas Akarka. Avodas Akarka is really a category, unless you mean the word avoda in a different kind of way. Meaning working in a sense, not work of the karka, but working the karka. Okay, so working in what way? For what purpose? Any kind of work?
Towards an
idea of growth. Because that actually shifts the definition. That phrase could have meant something else, as I can guess. So essentially you're saying to promote or to prepare for growth. Okay, that's the example of the first.
Loosening the ground.
Loosening the ground. Why? So loosening the ground is actually closer to the form, right? That's what I'm doing when I'm plowing. Plowing would be loosening the ground.
Right. In order to then allow.
In order to plow. Right. Okay. So the same thing as Tobias saying that essentially, yeah, Sammy.
The ground itself.
Ah. Okay. So now you're opening up a different possibility, which was conceivably.
You could bring it closer to Zriya.
Right. So your phrase of Otis Karka could have meant what Sammy's saying, but instead you took it in a different direction, which is also a legitimate direction. Yes?
When you say benefiting the ground, you benefit in the way that it's more able for Zoraya. So like, you can't really...
Maybe, right. Maybe yes and maybe not. That's not necessarily the objective fact. We'll get into that a little bit more. But essentially what we'll see here is that this seems to be a machlokas rishonim with a lot of ramifications for how the sugya plays out.
Yeah, that's right. We saw it as more.
Oh, so you're probably right. So Rashi, how do you, so just very quickly get our toes wet. So how do you see it as Rashi and Rambam?
Rashi says that it's completely for Zriya.
Okay, how do you see that in Rashi? Because
in every
which Rashi? Okay. Rashi consistently.
Yeah, consistently brings Rita into the time, and not by Rambam.
Okay, interesting, right. So the Rambam doesn't mention Rita specifically, and he seems to phrase it as working on the character. Right, so it could be, and there's ample sources in Shas and in Rishonim for either perspective, so we will continue with this point, that...
Well, why would you work on the contract? Wouldn't
okay, maybe, well, first of all, we have to figure out how much we want to sharpen that definition of not for Zriya. Does it mean not actually for Zriya, not potentially for Zriya? We'll get into all those avenues. But just broadly speaking for now, for the almost have to go to Minnesota slot, so do we mean, roughly speaking, that this is about preparing for Zriya? So preparing the ground to cultivate growth is the act of Harisha, is the function of Harisha? Or no, the action of Harisha, as, just to give you a clue, if you look on Kuf Gimel and Aleph, you may see an indication of this direction more, that it's about working the land, about doing something to the land, improving the land, enhancing the land, and you're going to see some of the other things that come out of certainly the Toldos, some of the things that we see about. Just to mention very quickly, you see the Gemara draws a connection between Bona and Choresh. So the difference seems to be, in terms of what you're dealing with, Choresh is an outside issue and Bona is an inside issue, but if we're talking about purely preparing for planting, then it completely breaks down. You plan on planting on your kitchen floor? Presumably not. Right? So then, hopefully not. So then, focusing too strongly on that element is going to be a problem for some of the issues that we're going to see here. So that's the show again. Tomorrow is a Chumash day. Stay tuned for further agendas, and we will wish you a wonderful Wednesday.
Enjoy.